Hello and welcome to the Fishing Guide Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Wickman. Holy cow. In with a bass legend, Gary Klein. And I have so many things. I was talking to him like, what should I talk about? And then I realized that I'm standing here with someone that's in the Bass Fishing Hall of Fame, Blue Jacket. You know, I take the pictures for them. And I'm like, dude, now I finally get to grill them. Not really grill you, but let's, you know, put your fishing career in a nutshell for us.
Well, I tell you, you know, first of all, thank you for having me on your podcast. And, you know, I'm just an angler that's very passionate about fishing. You know, I started at a very young age. And if you were to go back and read up on my history, I was kind of the first angler from California to start the migration out to the Midwest to compete full time. In 1979, I left California to start fishing on the BASS circuit at the age of 20. And I was just that young kid that was just eaten up with bass fishing.
Right.
I love the outdoors, and it's the experience, it's the adventure of it never being the same.
Right.
And I had no idea if I could learn how to, if I would be successful or not. But the one thing that was for sure is I wanted to try.
Uh-huh.
So I came out here in 79, competed my first year on the BASS circuit, and I've been following my dream ever since then. It's been a pretty awesome ride.
So going back in there in those early days, Zell Rowland, right? So you got to fish against Zell Rowland?
Oh, man, I ran with Zell Rowland. Yeah, we called him the master disaster.
Hey, did you ever, like, play pranks on Zell? Because literally you had to, like, unloosen his brake or something. You had to do something because Zell's going to do it to you.
You didn't really have to do much to Zell. I mean, Zell was kind of like his own worst enemy.
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I grew up with Zell.
And, really?
You know, I was out here fishing. I actually got to meet Zell and of course, Rick Klun and his stepbrother, Randy Fight. And I spent a lot of time with those guys. In between events, I would go to Lake Conroe, South Texas, and hang out with Randy.
Wow.
And if they needed a little bit of help in their guiding ventures, and I would, you know, work with them for a day and guide a little bit. But, yeah, that was kind of my running group. You know, Lonnie Stanley, Mike Dias.
Really?
Oh, yeah, the whole group. They kind of took me under their wings and let me come out here and compete with them. But there's a lot of good memories back there. But again, you have to understand, when I started, you know, my hair was a little bit long and wore bell-bottom pants. I was in California.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I bet you stuck out a little bit in
just
Texas.
Just a little. But no, they accepted me. I was a little bit different in the fact that the way I was raised. And I was raised basically competing and learning how to fish from a gentleman named D. Thomas.
Wow.
And D. Thomas is the father of flipping.
Yeah.
And D, I met when I was 15. First competition I ever observed was on my home lake, Lake Orville.
Yes.
And I worked at the marina.
So what marina was that?
Bidwell Canyon Marina.
Okay.
On Lake Orville. I worked there probably 4 or 5 years, seasonal.
All right.
In between, you know, my high school working, my high school days. But they had an event at that marina, and I was just intrigued to see. Man, there was 14-foot boats. They had, like, you know, 50-horse engines on them. It was like a big deal for me because I learned then that the guys were paying an entry fee to go catch fish to win money.
Right.
First place was, I think, $300 or $500.
That was big back then, though.
Oh, it was big time. It was $25 entry fee. Now, mind you, I was working at Bidwell Canyon Marina. I was making $1.65 an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, that was minimum wage, and that's what I was getting paid. But from that time on, I introduced myself to D. I became kind of like the son that he didn't have.
Right.
D and his wife, Terry, had 3 daughters.
Right.
And D took me under his wing, and I spent so many hours and days across the country fishing, or up and down the West Coast, fishing with D, mostly on the California Delta. But there's a lot of other places that we fish, and of course, all the lakes, strong competitor. But he taught me how to fish shallow water with the flipping stick.
Right.
And none of our anglers in the Midwest had heard of the flipping technique.
Right.
It hadn't really been established yet. So that was my ace in the hole in 1979. When I left California to come out here and fish, and that kind of got my foot in the door, won my second BASS tournament, and it was pretty cool. Led Angler of the Year all year, and Roland beat me at the last event on Lake Millwood.
Wow.
Beat me the last day, I think, by 1 pound, 4 ounces or something. And back then, we were running total weight for the year.
right,
for the AOI.
Wow.
So, you know, there's just a lot of history there, but like to where we are today, and of course, right, you know, you and I are here, we're at the 25 Red Crest Major League Fishing Championship here in Huntsville, right, Alabama. We're watching the competition under a different format.
That's right, which is a cool format too. Tell them about the format.
Well, the format came from my head.
Right.
But if you take a look at my history with conventional tournament fishing,
right,
of catching your limit, put them in a live well, and then you look at our format, you can tell that I rearranged everything that I felt was not necessary in a conventional event.
Right.
For example, what other sport can you think of where you compete against your opponent and you never know where you stand?
Right.
Well, that's the way fishing used to be.
That's right.
You'd have the best day in your life fishing and come to find out at weigh-in, you caught just enough to get behind.
Right.
Because you had no other information.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was the thought process behind our real-time leaderboard.
Right.
You know, weigh-in, take or blast-offs, weigh-ins I did away with.
Right.
And if you look at the rules of conventional tournament fishing.
Yes.
Every rule violation leads to disqualification. I'm talking about
right.
anglers' decisions on the water
uh-huh.
under competition. If you do this, you're D. You can't do this. You can't
give
do
us
this,
a couple rules violations that happen now.
Well, I rearranged it for the Major League Fishing anglers to give them benefit of the doubt. Let them make the decision on what they can and can't do.
Right.
And if they choose to do it, their penalty is a timeout.
Right.
A time penalty because they're actually fishing 3 2.5-hour periods.
Yep.
And they're on the clock. They're on the clock. So they can hang a fish up and get out of the boat and go get that fish.
Right.
And it's still a recorded fish. They just take a time penalty.
Right.
You know, of course.
Or it touches the floor of the boat.
Well,
or
that's our fish landing violation.
Right.
And to be honest with you, that fish landing violation was not in the original rules.
Oh, really?
No. When we aired our first Major League Fishing Cup event on Lake Hampstead, I read all the reviews, you know, because we're pushing this out to a new audience.
Right.
They've never seen the format. And over time, one of the comments I continuously saw was handling of the fish.
Uh-huh. Right.
And so we decided to implement a fish landing violation.
Right.
And
tell us the reason why that's important.
Well, conservation is very important to me and for the longevity of this sport. And if you really think about it, I've had a great career as an angler. I've traveled the country. I've fished, you know, about every reservoir that we have in the United States multiple times. In order for a young angler or a new angler to have the same experiences that I've had, you know, catch five that weigh 50 or five that weigh 45 and, you know, these big fish and lots of fish and great smallmouth and big spotted bass, these new anglers will have those same experiences on the same water bodies that I have just 20 or 30 years later.
Right.
Because we're not building any new water bodies
exactly.
in the country at this time. So what we have to do is work very, very hard to manage the population of fish through habitat, restoration on these water bodies. To me, that's very, very important. And that's the reason why I run our Major League Fishing Fisheries Management Division, along with Stephen Barden.
Yep.
And we work very hard at working with all the state agencies so that we can ensure the future of these water bodies for new anglers.
All right, let's go back to where you were. You were talking about bringing something new to the world of fishing, bringing weighing the fish and releasing the fish.
Well, my thought process is this, or was that, and it still is today.
Right.
I wanted to create a format that an angler's never out of it. If you fish your traditional five fish limit, as the day goes on, especially the real-time leaderboard, and trying to show this to the mass, to the world, you know, usually towards the end of the day, with a five-fish limit, nobody can move up.
Right.
Because everybody's caught five, and in order to move up, you got to call a fish.
Right.
So, you know, you got to catch a really big fish to move up. So basically what that means is towards the end of the round, you have maybe one or two or three anglers that have the ability to move above the cut line.
Uh-huh.
With the every fish count format, an angler at the very bottom can land on a group of fish, and the next thing you know, he's in the top 10. So from an angler standpoint, you're never out of it. But also from an angler standpoint, you're never in it.
Right. That's
truly,
right.
Truly.
Ask number 21. Oh, yeah. Ask number 11 today.
You got it.
11 didn't make it.
Yeah, you got it. And that's the cool thing about a format is that you can never become complacent. In a traditional five fish limit, if you and I were fishing a team term, we roll out on Gunnersville and we stop on a spot and we have 36 pounds on our first five fish and they're in live well.
Right.
You and I are probably going to high five all day long thinking, man, we got this thing won.
Right.
And we don't even really have to fish the rest of the day. In major league fishing, you do.
Right.
Because I guarantee you, these anglers are going to catch us. They're going to catch us. They're that good. So you have to be not forced, but what I like about it from a professional angler's standpoint
right.
is it pushes me to learn, understand, and get better at fishing, better at making decisions,
right,
and better at understanding the tools that I'm using to catch the fish and how to maximize every minute that I'm on the water in all the areas that I fish. So this format is really a sports oriented format. Now every angler knows where they stand,
right,
and it definitely amps up it just amps up the intensity of it. It's phenomenal. And for those watching that have never played the game, there's a big difference. And when you play it under this format, it's like pretty gut-wrenching.
Let's talk about the advancement in technology for being able to see it. So
yeah.
now you're talking about live. You guys took that format, and then all of a sudden you add live to it, and the people that are watching it, it became a new thing, didn't it? It became a new venue.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah, yeah. The live streaming course is just off the roof. And, you know, again, as the fishing industry has evolved,
right,
fishing has evolved,
right,
it's the same thing. Media is evolving.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing a lot of the traditional TV networks get less and less in viewership.
Right.
And everything is turning to streaming on all the devices.
Right.
And that's what we were trying to capture. And the product that we had with our format is like perfect for those type of platforms. So it's
right.
really, really going good for us.
I think podcast shows like mine. Hey, should I throw a plug in there for mine? No. The Fishing Guide Podcast. No.
I like
but
it.
Podcast shows are just one way for people to find out more about anglers. But, you know, you have the website and things like that. Let's go back to watching it on TV. You have announcers that just make it exciting to watch, don't they? Tell us who those are.
Tell us, dude.
We
have Chad McKee and Jake JT, and those guys are awesome.
Right.
Awesome. But one thing that we've really tried to work on
right.
is showing the anglers fishing.
Right.
And that's why if you're watching the 25 Red Crest, you notice that all of our cameras are on the anglers and very little in the set. I mean, you can hear JT and Chad in the background. They do a phenomenal job
right.
Of explaining. You know, JT's an angler like I am.
Yeah.
He understands. He lives it and breathes it also. Chad, I've been impressed with Chad from the first time I've ever heard him
right.
and the first time I've ever met him, because you took an individual that knew nothing, zero, about competitive angling, and
right.
that man, crash course, took the time, studied to learn our sport, and that's why he is so good.
And then all of a sudden you get to the final and you have this announcer come on and it sounds like he's doing stock car racing or extreme motorcycling lurch, right? He comes on. How did you end up getting that dude? Like, were you just watching TV and go, we need him?
Well, we've worked with Steven over the past, you know, and he's
Give him his full name, though.
Do you know
his
call him Lurch, man.
I know everyone calls him. I was trying to figure out what his last name is.
Lurch.
No one knows.
He is a phenomenal individual.
Right.
But he also is an announcer for motorsports.
Yeah.
You know, he does all the motocross stuff. And he's also a phenomenal chef.
Oh, really? I did
oh,
not know that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I get spoiled every time Steven stays with it. And his name is Steven Scott.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Steven
yeah,
Scott.
Yeah.
We can make sure we give a shout out to him.
Yeah,
you know,
we just call him Lurch. But, God, that man can really prepare a meal.
Yeah, well, he can really get a crowd excited, too, into a frenzy. So that's pretty amazing. You also, we have to give a shout out to your media group, our media people in the back here. Yeah. Joe and Charity are in the back. And of course, they do a great job working with the media. And what that helps is for us to take what we see, like at the Cup here at Red Crest, and get that out to the people. And you guys really seem to work well with the media.
Well, thank you, because the media, without the media, our sport will not exist.
Right.
Our growth will not continue. The anglers don't have that avenue. So the media is a very, very important role for our success. I mean, you have to have it, and we realize that. And we love working with the professionals that we work with.
Okay, you got to tell us. Now, a lot of anglers, I seem like Zell told me a story about Rick Lund, like he used to travel and he was sleeping like in a station wagon type thing when he's moving around. So when you came from California, did you come in what would be an SUV or something today? And did you travel and have to sleep in your vehicle and all that stuff?
Yes, sir. Actually, how I started my career is with $1,000 loan from the bank.
Wow.
No credit cards. My mother had co-signed a personal loan for me.
Yeah?
I deferred my first month's payment of $93 for 3 months. Right. And when I left California to fish my first BASS tournament on the St. John's River, which, that was a long drive, wow, I had $1,000 cash in my pocket.
Wow.
And I came out of my little black Chevy van, and I had a cot tied in the van, and I lived in my van.
Yeah.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. All I had to have was electricity and a shower. So I stayed in the campgrounds everywhere I went.
Do you think that made a difference? There's still anglers today. They kind of have that. Some of them still have stories like that, don't they?
Oh, exactly. I'm one of those anglers too. I'm kind of a loner. I'm not in groups and crowds. I don't like to go out at night at restaurants and stay until 10, 11, 12. I love to get away.
Right.
And just kind of, myself and, I travel with Mark Davis, him and I are really good friends. And
right,
we like to just kind of get out, relax, do our deal, talk a lot about fishing and, what ifs, how can we get better,
right,
and go to sleep and get up early and go do it again.
If I could let you have 30 seconds on live scope fishing, we ain't going to spend a long time on that, because I'd rather talk about the old days and but tell us, just give us a nutshell of your theory and ideas on that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Okay. I'm one of the, I want to say, old school anglers. I mean,
yeah,
I was brought up. But the way I explain it to folks is this: the new technology intrigues me because I, as an angler, I get bored quick. If I had to fish the same lures on the same lake over and over and over, that's not me. And as far as fighting the fish, that's not me. I like the hunting aspect of finding groups of fish, figuring out patterns. That's just me. That's what I like to do, always push myself. This new technology has forced me as an angler to either continue to compete or, right, get out of the game. And I don't want to get out of the game. I want to understand it as good as the younger anglers, because they've grown up with it. And I've been pushing myself very hard over the last couple of years of trying to understand the efficiency of catching fish with a forward-facing sonar.
Right.
It's the new technology. But one thing I will say about it, as far as the future of this sport, what I love about it is look at the opportunity that the young anglers have to make it into this sport as an angler and being able to compete with us anglers. So I love seeing all these young anglers getting involved in our sport, because that is a true growth.
But also, we'll have to continue a little bit more on it, is you've changed your format, at least for the Red Crest, didn't you?
Oh, exactly.
So
yeah,
tell us about that.
And I think we really came out on top of that. And that just didn't happen by coincidence. I mean, we spent a lot of time, as we always do, our management team, a group of anglers, and we're trying to figure out the what ifs, because we're evolving.
Right.
We don't know what the future holds. Right. You make a good decision or a bad decision, but we do know that we have the ability to change things. One thing that was for sure is we felt that we had to have a format in competition that didn't alienate any of the anglers, because we want 100% of the anglers participating.
Yep.
So we didn't want to split that, 54-50 against it. We wanted to pull everybody in. But that was a cool thing about our format. Our format, folks, is 3 2.5-hour periods per round with two 15-minute breaks. You compete for two rounds to advance the knockout round. And then you have one day where you just go at it. Top guys qualify for the championship round, 4 days of competition. So what we felt that would really amp up again,
right,
the angler's decision-making and the intensity of the sport is being able to take and allow them to use forward-facing for one period of their choice. And that's what we implemented. And I tell you, man, our numbers are showing it. Live streaming numbers are off the charts, and everybody loves watching our format now because it's just not all forward-facing.
Right.
Now there's more strategy. Who's using it? Who's not using it? If he's not using it, when is he going to use it?
Right. And it doesn't hurt that you have, like, Jacob Wheeler, who I think is the greatest example. When he was younger and when he won the All-American, he didn't have forward-facing mm-hmm. technology, but yet he won the All-American, and mm-hmm. so he has the skill. And all of a sudden, you got someone who's got skill that can find the fish, catch the fish. He doesn't need forward-facing. He may be using mapping, and we had heard this week that people thought that mapping was the biggest development in bass fishing.
Well,
when they came out with the mapping, that changed everything compared to forward facing, where that's different, but the mapping was different. We'll have to get you back on the show
again. Thank you for having me.
We'd like to hear some more of these stories. We don't want you to go away from
them. I don't want to bore you with them.
Oh, we love these stories. Anyway, that takes us to Tackle Time. Tackle Time sponsored by Pico Lures. Pico Lures has a complete line of hard and soft baits. So if you want to go out there and catch bass with or without forward facing, guess what? They got it. So check them out at picolures.com. Gary, if they want to find out more about what you're doing and
I tell you, if you want to track me, you go to majorleaguefishing.com, go to the fisheries management division, and you'll read all the articles of the habitat builds and see the schedule of what we're doing around the country.
Right.
If you want to follow me personally, you can go to Pro Angler Gary Klein.
Okay, there you have it. Like I always like to end the show, make sure you keep your hook sharp, your lures in the water.